This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with forensic scientist and professor Dan Crane on this edition of the podcast. I want to talk to you about another case here, Koberger, and I'm just going to read this little article. This is from Inside Edition, because I'd like you to kind of decipher what I'm reading and explain. They're reporting investigators found DNA from three men at the murder scene of the Idaho Four. It's according to defense attorney Jay Weston Logsdon in an objection to the state's motion for a protective order obtained by Inside Edition. Logsdon says that investigators found the DNA from two men inside the house and the third outside the residence on a glove. None of the DNA matches that of Brian Koberger, says Logsdon, noting that the DNA was never run through CODIS in hopes of finding a direct match. Koberger and his lawyer filed an objection because they're seeking a detailed breakdown of how genetic genealogy was utilized to help the FBI initially identify Koberger as a person of interest in the case. The state's arguing that since DNA from the buccal swab provided by the suspect matched the DNA found on the knife sheath at the scene, the genetic genealogy results will play no role in the upcoming trial and are inconsequential to proving the suspect's innocence or guilt. In response, Koberger and his lawyers outlined that they believe to be the perceived holes in the case, starting with the DNA. What is your thoughts on this? Obviously, this was a party house. There's going to be other DNA there. Is this them just really trying to wave a flag or throw a squirrel somewhere and go, squirrel, while we are looking at specific areas and while, you know, his DNA wasn't found in other places? It certainly was found in a very compromising area on the knife sheath.
Right. Well, you know, I think there are two things that are going on with what you've just relayed. One of them is the defense is trying to draw attention to the fact that there are alternative suspects. Mm-hmm. The fact that the DNA from these other two males was not searched against the CODIS database, mm-hmm. I think that's a fair criticism by the defense. You know, the government, the prosecutors, use that CODIS database to generate investigative leads.
Sure.
And the defense would really like to have some alternative suspects to generate some leads as to who else might have been involved or who may have been the perpetrator of these crimes if you presume that Koberger is innocent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're pointing to that and saying, hey, the judge that's overseeing all this, you should order the prosecutor to do a CODIS search with those other males to mm-hmm. see if they may have been in the area and might have had motives and so forth. It's worth mentioning, I think, that the defense can't do those CODIS searches. The FBI only allows law enforcement agencies to have access to those types of searches. So if the defense wants it to be done, it needs to be ordered by the judge, and then the prosecution and law enforcement can do those searches. But then the other thing is that the assertion that because Koberger's DNA was found to match based on a buccal swab comparison, I think that's I'm calling foul on that. That's disingenuous.
Explain that.
What they're trying to do is say that testing his DNA directly erases or fixes what's known as ascertainment bias. The words ascertainment bias are a pretty good descriptor, actually. You know, ascertainment, how did we identify this individual as a suspect? And bias, does it skew how much weight we should be attaching to the finding that he matches? And so, you know, let me see if I can give you just an analogy for ascertainment bias that translates pretty well here. Let's say that, you know, there's a one in a million chance that you would have a winning lottery ticket, right? You purchase one lottery ticket and there's a one in a million chance that it's a winner, right?
Sure.
Where ascertainment bias comes into play is this, is that if you tell me, Tony, that I've got, that you have a winning lottery ticket, I'm going to be pretty impressed. Say, wow, this guy's lucky. He's one in a million chance that he's going to have a winning lottery ticket. How much less impressed would I be, or should I be, if you then also told me, yeah, and I'm really glad I got the winning lottery ticket because I purchased 10,000 tickets, right? Sure. I'd make quite an investment. I would tell you, oh, gee, I'm 10,000 fold less impressed mm-hmm. that you got the winning lottery ticket than if you'd gotten the ticket from having purchased just one. And so that's kind of what the defense is saying here, is that, you know, they didn't just pull him out off the street and say, you know, let's test your DNA. They pulled him in, they did that testing on him only after they had, you know, done some other DNA testing to you know, narrow to winnow things down, the equivalent of having purchased, you know, thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of lottery tickets. They looked through a big database before they found the person they wanted to focus their attention on. We should be less impressed that you know, they have this rare DNA profile because of the way that they identified him. And so back to the lottery ticket example, if you've got a real big smile on your face and you're standing at the in line at the lottery ticket office, I'm going to be pretty sure that you've got a winning lottery ticket, right? Mm-hmm. And if you've just got a big smile on your face and you're not at the lottery ticket office, I'm not going to be as sure that you have the winning lottery ticket. You know, the issue isn't that his DNA matches at this point in the conversation. The issue is how did they figure out his DNA matches? And then we really just shouldn't be that impressed that they, you know, you could test him another 50 times and his DNA is going to stay the same. Mm-hmm. The key here was how they first identified him. And that's where the ascertainment bias creeps in. And so the defense is saying, we need to know how big of a net was cast, how many people could have been included as a possible source of the DNA, because that's how much we need to downgrade or adjust how impressed we are with the match. And testing him 10 times, 20 times, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's tainted by that business of how it is he was first identified as a suspect. So anyway, that's what the defense is arguing here, is that no. The issue is how was he first identified as a suspect, not whether or not he matches. I don't think they're at the point yet where they're arguing he doesn't actually match, and maybe they never will be at that point. They're saying, we aren't sure how impressed we should be that he matches given the way that he was identified.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.